Got my first guest here this morning, Sebastian Wells. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Aaron.
How you doing?
I'm very, very nervous.
Well, I shouldn't laugh when someone says that, should I? It's very rude of me. Well, it's just us and, you know, a couple of people listening, so it's all good.
Yep.
I discovered the other night that you had, just in a social situation, that you've written a book, and I thought maybe it had happened a little while ago and I just hadn't heard about it, but you've actually just finished it.
Yeah.
Or rather, the book is just like it's printed. There's a copy here on the desk.
I've gone through the whole self-publishing thing. So I got the box of author copies maybe 3 weeks ago. So it's reasonably new, and I've just been sort of sending them out to friends and family, and posting on Facebook and stuff. And
we're just talking off the air about when you've produced something that's, you know, you've poured your heart and soul into, and especially in this case, it's not your day job, I presume.
No.
So now the job is actually only half done. Now you have to promote it.
Exactly. Yeah. This is actually you think like once you finish the book, it's going to be great and you can relax, but the publicity is very challenging for, particularly for like an introvert who's used to, you know, yes, writing a book. But
So you enjoyed that part of it?
The writing?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was extremely difficult. That's not going to be true for anyone who writes a book, obviously. It can be a good experience, but for me it was just massively challenging, and there were many, many false starts and a lot of time spent writing versions of this that didn't work at all.
Yeah.
So,
had you written much before you started it?
I wrote another novel about sort of uni life. It was about like boys and girls and stuff. And sort of tried to polish that up and get that good. But it ended up being a pretty bad book. It was written in the first person, so it sort of, you get a lot of stuff for free if you write first person. So it's like, I did this, then I did that, because you're sort of in the head of the character. So it sort of, it worked a bit, but it wasn't wouldn't have been good enough to publish. This is third person, and it's sci-fi, and there are just new challenges with those decisions, basically. And it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be,
Sci-fi gives you the capacity, I think, to go anywhere and do anything and put your characters through novel experiences. But by that same token, the whole world is your oyster, and maybe it's quite hard to narrow it down, is it?
It depends on the sort of sci-fi, I guess. This is near future, so... And I wanted it to be really grounded and convincing and plausible.
Yeah.
So there are actually a lot of constraints. There's a plot there that's reasonably tight. And so the characters do have to be shoehorned into the plot a bit.
Yeah.
Which is not a good way to write characters, you know. You really want your characters to be making their own decisions and you to be following them.
Yeah.
But this is more like a screenplay structure, so it really was hitting beats in the story to keep it moving.
Well, do you just want to tell us what the book is about? It's called The Light.
Yeah.
Yeah?
So it's called The Light. It's set in 2038, I think. It's about artificial intelligence, so it's that standard trope, is that the first big superintelligence that we invent.
Yeah.
But the sort of the hook for this one is, so that they've built this age... AGI, you can call it, artificial generalized intelligence. It's extremely powerful, orders of magnitude more powerful than anything ever before.
Yeah.
It's ingesting the internet 10 times a second, so it's just absorbing everything we know all the time.
Yeah.
But we can't make contact with it. We can't get a response out of it. Every time we try and communicate with it, we get nothing back. So that's the mystery. And
okay.
So at the start of the book, they turn to Connor, the main character. They ask him for help for reasons that will become clear as you read.
Be revealed during the story.
Yeah.
Do you give a bit of the background about how such a thing came to pass?
The building of the thing?
Yeah.
It was... I'm not sure how much I actually want to reveal. it does go back to describe how they built it and sort of why they built it, what the intention was. I'll reveal a little bit, I guess. The idea was that if you get an AI that's smart enough, it can actually answer a lot of very difficult questions in a way that will really improve all of our lives.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to work out the best way to run the economy, let's say.
Yes.
Down to what's the best career for me?
Yeah.
You know, or like what should I eat for breakfast this morning?
So it's AI as a kind of oracle.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. With the intention being to produce the greatest benefit for the greatest number.
So what does it mean when you create something that has got all the answers and it doesn't want to talk to you?
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, there's Christians. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Right. Okay, so this is, all right, so this is not like the Terminator where artificial intelligence took over and wanted to get rid of us. But is there the fear? Does it bring up that fear? I guess that's always the fear with AI, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, the main character's name is Connor, which is definitely a reference to Terminator 2. So Terminator 2 was my favorite movie of all time. So I'm heavily.
So how old were you when that came out?
Yeah, I think like 10 or something.
It's imprinted on your brain.
Yeah, at that age, that's the age, right? If you see the good movie, it really gets you. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So I was definitely imprinted by Schwarzenegger and
Star Wars for me, age 7.
Oh yeah. Nice. Yeah,
it was the first film I went to in a theater.
Right.
Yeah. So totally imprinted on my brain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You never sort of lose those films.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, at the start of the story, you sort of learn that was the intention of the AI. But, I mean, there are questions there around whether, you know, an AI doesn't have to be a killer robot to have really concerning impacts on human destiny, right? I mean... The really interesting thing here is that all of this is actually going to happen sometime, probably within our lifetimes.
Actually, because I can imagine that someone's like, yeah, if we could have an AI that can answer every question I've got, that would be awesome.
Mm.
But would it actually be awesome if you could answer every single question instantaneously?
Exactly. I mean, so Google is pretty much now answering all of our technical questions, you know, good questions, factual,
practical stuff.
Yeah. Something like age of Barack Obama, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But there are questions like, what should I do? You know, what should happen here? What would make the most people happy?
You can ask Google those questions.
Yeah, I suppose you could. Yeah, you wouldn't trust the answer.
No, you wouldn't want to take them to heart.
But once those questions start being answered, then we lose a lot of, what's the word, agency? I mean, human control of our own destiny. You know, like, if we're always offloading those decisions to something that's making much better decisions than us, we are, in a pretty real sense, enslaved by whatever we're dependent on, right? And
especially once you start to assume it's accurate all the time.
Yeah, you need that trust. I mean, yeah.
And can you trust?
And how would you convince people to trust it if, you know... Yeah.
Some would inherently and some would not inherently, I think.
You would definitely always have a pretty large number that wouldn't, I think, regardless of...
There's huge possibility. I can see already, like I haven't read the story, I've just seen the book for the first time today. There's obviously huge possibilities of where this could go.
Mm.
But something that's intriguing me, because I think, where did you first sit down and start writing it? A long time ago, right?
Uni.
Did you say 15 years... I was looking at your website just now. Is that what it said?
Yeah. So 15 years ago, around about, I wrote the first story that was my sci-fi story that had a somewhat similar structure to this, but it wasn't about AI, and it was a terrible book. It was about a married couple that lived on an island that they had moved to escape from technology. Anyway, that failed. It's amazing how hard you can work on a story. With character development, with plot, with what you think are exciting events, and then you read it and it's just completely dead on the page and just nothing works. Like your eyes just glaze over immediately.
Had you had training in how to write?
Which was a problem. So I spent years and years trying. I thought I was sort of good enough because the book before this one sort of worked.
Yeah.
You could read it and it was readable and it carried you along a bit. But for some reason, every time I tried to write this, it was just completely dead. And so eventually I joined I did a course at the New Zealand Creative Writing College, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. So I was mentored through the first third of this book.
Yeah.
And she picked up on what I was doing wrong, which was largely that the voice thing, you do have to be in the character's head. You can't talk about, even if it's third person,
yep.
You can't talk about things that they aren't thinking about or don't know about. You really are still constrained into their world.
Okay, yeah.
Which is, I mean, you don't notice that as a reader when you read books, but it's basically the Jungian rule is you are living someone else's life. That is the appeal of reading.
Right.
Yeah, you are in someone else.
Yeah, well, I guess you don't notice it in a book because no book's successful without it. So
exactly, yeah. I mean, if you read a book that doesn't do it, that's when it's just dead words.
You're not going to get there. Yeah. So the reason I asked about how long you'd been doing this is because, like, everyone's talking about AI now, but it was not really back then, not 10 or 15 years ago.
Some were, but it's in
popular culture now.
Now it's big. Yeah. There was a guy called Ray Kurzweil. He wrote a book called The Singularity Is Near. Not sure when that came out, but that was a very exciting book for someone who was interested in AI, because it was talking about the point that the singularity is when AI reaches human level and then rapidly accelerates, and then you can't predict what the world will be like after that because things just start changing way too quickly.
Yeah.
So that was really exciting, and he's a very he had a history of being very accurate with his predictions.
Maybe that when he said near, how near did he mean? Because that doesn't seem accurate now.
So he's saying human level intelligence by 2029. And I think Elon Musk has said something similar, like early 2030s.
What do they mean by that? Because you've got to define human intelligence.
Yeah,
that's right. We tend to think it's what they test for in school because that's what we're used to being tested on. But then there's also people who say there's all types of intelligence, you know, that academic stuff doesn't test for.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we've got ethics, morality, and the whole question of consciousness as well. Are you trying to cover all those bases all at once?
So I've put consciousness aside because that is another basket, and it's already been talked about a lot, and it's also not hugely relevant, I've decided now. I mean, it's very exciting to think about a conscious robot, but I don't think we'll have robots that appear to be completely conscious, and I think that'll be all that we care about. Like, the technical question of whether they are or not is obviously impossible to answer. But
so it's that experience of interacting with them.
Yeah, it's what we'll feel towards them. And So how do you define human intelligence? Because you can be good at writing an essay or painting a picture or answering exam questions, but generally, the idea is that the AGI is the artificial generalized intelligence. It just means something that can learn something somewhere and then just reason, use what it's learned about that one thing to apply to another scenario if it detects that the problem space is similar. And it'll be something that learns much in the way that we learn. So you'll expose it to the world.
Yeah,
you don't teach it anything. It'll need some sort of a boundary between itself and the world that it uses to detect the world and map how the world works. And so it'll reason and think and understand things much the same way that we do. But once it gets there, it'll be doing all of that much faster. And then if you sort of imagine, we build models of the world that are complicated up to a certain level. So, government, how to run a company, how to write a book.
Yeah.
You know, that these things are complicated, but we don't get much more complicated than that. It's fairly soon we get confused that there are too many factors in the model and we depend on computers. But
We did, and you can see that, like we already know a cheap $10 calculator can do maths better than us.
Yeah.
Right, so that's not necessarily our strength, but we have an ability to... This is where it gets hazy.
Mm.
Like, we have an ability to, like, when we meet another person, we're picking up lots of information about them.
Mm.
And when you talk to... I've seen autistic people talking online about their confusion when they're with a group of people and something happens and they completely miss it. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and when they're, of course, when they're writing, of course, it's much more limited interaction, so they seem the same as everyone else.
Mm.
And so there's something that our brain's doing where it's absorbing a lot of information that way.
Yeah.
About human interactions.
Socially,
And I think that's much harder for computer systems to pick up because you've got to work out what to measure.
Yeah.
And then we've got a part of our brain that knows which bits to filter out and which bits to pay attention to.
Yep.
And
yep.
I mean, what do you think about
that particular problem, the social problem space?
Yeah.
For me, it's just another problem space. I mean, it is complicated, but it is data. You know, so we are reading facial expression and body language and, you know, voice tone. It's all information.
Yes.
And those things correlate to... So I can make predictions. You know, I've learned that if someone is talking with a nervous voice like I am, you know, that
you're hiding it well. It's all right. You know, maybe your family will know.
Yeah. We know what that means because we've sort of learnt that those voice tones are associated with this sort of behaviour.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of mapping patterns. It's just the idea of a robot or a computer doing that is spooky because it's still we haven't got that yet.
Yeah.
That'll be another domino that falls, in my opinion. That AI can paint beautiful pictures.
This is the thing that's just coming out at the moment.
Yeah, the DALL-E stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So if maybe you should explain just briefly what that is for people who don't know. Because can anyone go do it now?
Yeah, so now it is online and free.
Yeah.
It was locked down for most of this year. So DALL-E, and there's a few other ones. You basically put a text prompt into it, like cat riding a surfboard in the style of Monet or something.
Yeah.
And it will create images for you. And you can use those images on your book cover or website.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And folks, if you haven't seen them, like I've seen them, they look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, wow, that's a beautiful picture or that's an incredible picture.
Yeah. And it's amazing that it can work out what you want from those words and then know how to put a cat on a surfboard. It needs to understand what a surfboard is. It needs to understand what on is.
Yeah.
And then what riding a surfboard would look like if a cat was on. You know, like it's...
Yeah, and then it doesn't... And it's just not... It doesn't look like it's just cut out a picture of a cat. Like if I did that, I'd cut out a picture and I'd stick it on. That's what I imagine how a computer would do it. It's a painting and in the style of Monet.
Yeah, it's definitely generating the cat. It's not taking a... So they work by basically, they start with white noise, with just random noise, and then they keep doing passes over that noise, making it look more like what would be a cat on a surfboard.
Yeah.
And then they keep going until it's more and more aligned with...
Oh, so you've seen it like actually in action.
Yeah. But I don't understand how what the neural networks are really doing behind it.
Is it because it's learned? Like it's learned its own way to do it? Like a person hasn't said... Do this, if then do this, you know, that kind of just basic programming, is it? It's not programming.
It's definitely new. So all these interesting AI problems that we're solving now are all done by neural networks, simple neural networks, which is sort of a neural network is actually not that hard to understand. It's just a mesh of connections, just a random mesh. It's like a tangled net of connections.
Something I was personally astounded by recently was I saw an interview with, it was about the Beatles films with Peter Jackson, and he said all they had was a lot of the sound was just a single mono recording of what was happening in the room, and they used AI to separate all the instruments out.
Oh, wow.
And this blew me away because my job is to record things, and if you get some interference noise in that's the same pitch as the person speaking, it can't be separated.
Yeah.
It just cannot be done, right? And then I suddenly discovered that using AI now they can do this.
Oh, yeah.
They can separate so the guitar becomes completely separate from the drums. You know, some of that's the pitches, the tone, like the hi-hat and things like that. The tone of that is going to match with the guitar and the parts of the human voice. It should be impossible. I still don't really know how it does it, and probably nobody really does.
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah. So that's the power of it. I read an interesting thing that, like, someone talking once about is Terminator the future we're going to have, and they said that's not very likely. What's probably more likely would be, for instance, if an intelligence that was set up to make paperclips got out of hand and decided to turn the whole world into paperclips.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the actual wonky thing that would happen.
Yeah. So you sort of want to, if you build an AI and you give it a task, there's this fear that if we don't articulate the constraints well enough, then the AI would turn the world into paperclips, right?
Yeah. And that's something that humans are good at. No one would try to turn the world into paperclips.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of context that we're adding to that requirement if you tell a person to do it, that the AI might be too dumb to know. Yeah, I don't think that'll be sort of that the AIs will be getting better and better over time, and those sorts of things will be ironed out very early on in the sort of
yeah. Well, if we've thought of that problem, then we can solve for it. So it's not too hard. So a little quick bit about your background, like you must have some technological goings on in your life to be able to write something like this.
Yeah, so I'm a software developer by trade. Yeah. So
do you work in AI? Or
No.
Just kind of you just know because you're in that general area. What's going on?
I've always just followed AI stuff just out of interest, but it's had nothing to do with my work really. I mean, I'm slightly IT, you know, but AI is a different sort of field. The people that work in AI are using tools more than writing code.
Yeah, right.
There are things that have neural networks in them, and you train your own neural networks and stuff. And, the cutting edge stuff is where they're building new models of AI that are more like the human brain that will start doing that learning like humans. There'll be a lot of coding there, I'm guessing, because that's new. But my interest has really been just a sort of hobbyish sort of thing.
And you. I know, like, I interviewed your mother a little while ago, Deanna, and she's an artist. Mm. And it's interesting that a software developer came from an artist family. But then you've gone and done. This is a piece of art anyway, writing. So.
Yeah. No, I've always been quite creative as well. It is our family is pretty creative. But the software thing is. People have this idea of code as being really dry and technical, but if you're writing code, it is actually a very creative thing. You are building something, and if you're given something to build and you're using code to build it, it is incredibly freeform. You can build it in any way you want. Code is very flexible. Software development itself is actually a pretty creative job. There are plenty of other IT jobs that you wouldn't call creative,
So, folks, we're talking to Sebastian Wells. He's written a book called The Light. It's is this a dystopian future?
Well, that's the key question, really.
Because I actually can't, from what we've talked about, it could go either way. Like, Terminator was clearly a dystopian future. Sebastian doesn't want to reveal too much about the story, but give us your blurb that you tell people just to describe it.
I could read the back of the book. It's sort of similar to what I said at the start. So that there's the AI that they can't get a response from.
Yep.
Fairly early on in the book, you learn that the intention was to build an AI that can answer moral questions.
Yeah.
So those should questions: should we do this? You know, should we do that? What is the bad thing to do? What is the good thing to do?
Yeah.
And that. There's a question there about, are there really right answers to what's right and what's wrong? Is there a correct answer to what's the right thing to do? That's the sort of philosophical foundational thing. Yeah.
And who are the sci-fi writers that inspire you?
I don't read a huge amount anymore. Dune was one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah.
The Black Cloud somewhat inspired this. The Black Cloud, I don't know if...
No, I don't. I don't know. Who wrote that?
I can't remember.
Right. What about Philip K. Dick? You read his stuff? He's meant to inspire every sci-fi writer.
Was he the iRobot?
Yeah, maybe.
I've read some of those classics. I don't know. Those older books have aged for me.
It's a technology thing, isn't it? It's very hard to...
Yeah,
yeah.
The Black Cloud was about a large intergalactic cloud that moved into the solar system, and we were trying to work out a way of talking to it, and that was a really cool concept. I thought, there's this thing that's really smart, but you don't know how to interact.
Communicate. Yeah. Okay, I can see a little bit as a forerunner to your concepts here.
Mm.
Okay, well, look, it's been really interesting chatting to you, and I don't know what to make of this just yet.
Well, you might have to read it.
Yeah, I might. I think I will have to read it, and then. I have to interview you again just to explain what I've just read.
Yep.
Is it going to be like that? Is it going to leave me more questions than answers?
You'll have to make up your mind about whether what happened is good or not, I think.
Yeah, and this could be important discussions that we're due to have as a culture with the
very much
technologies going.
Yeah. the next 10 years will be interesting for sure. Yeah.
And now you've got you've got to promote it. We talked about this at the start. Mm. If there's someone out there who likes promoting things like this,
thank you very much, Aaron.
SebastianWells.co.nz. That's where you can read about, get a little blurb about the book and get in touch with Sebastian.
Mm.
And I don't know if there actually is someone out there who wants to do that, but you know, I just thought I'd mention it just in case.
Mm.
We had a discussion, as I said earlier, before we went on the air about the difficulty of you've created this thing and actually the job's half done. You've got to then turn around and get it out to the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So this is the first bit of publicity that I've done. So thank you very much for offering to do this. Yeah,
and it only came about because we met socially and someone brought it up. So, yeah. So, yeah. But it's good to get into it, get going. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for coming in.